This is episode number 300 of the Inner Fight podcast. Massive shout out to our show sponsor, Smith Street Paleo, and a massive shout out to all of our listeners. This is the 300th edition of the show, and who better to join us than the man himself, Mr. Jason Kalipa. Welcome back to the show, folks, and joining us all the way from the States, a name that some of you might know. Those of you who've been around CrossFit for a little while will definitely know Jason Kalipa. Jason, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. How's things?
Great, man. Thank you for having me. Thank you, guys.
Not at all. Mate, I guess to kick it off, like, we obviously know you because we're nerdy about CrossFit, but some of our listeners and those that are new to CrossFit might not know you too much. Talk us through your entry to CrossFit and sort of what's happened since that happened, because your story is absolutely incredible. So give us a bit of a background.
Yeah, man. So, you know, I throughout high school and college, I worked at a conventional gym, and I used to work at the front desk, and I was selling gym memberships throughout college. And so during college, I was working full-time, going to school full-time, and doing the conventional gym thing. And then I was introduced to a few different things like Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu, et cetera. And then I found CrossFit. A friend introduced it to me about 2006, and I just fell in love with it after a few months. So not right in the beginning. It took me a little bit of time to understand that you need to kind of push yourself to a different level, yeah. But I like the idea of having a coach. I like the idea of having friends with me. So essentially, I got introduced to it, and then in 2008, right, I've been doing it now for about a year-ish. I compete in the CrossFit Games. Was very fortunate enough to win the CrossFit Games, actually, out of nowhere. And, you know, it all kind of happens for a reason, right? I mean, the CrossFit Games were located about 45 minutes from my house, right? So my buddies and I were just like, hey, let's go down there. Let's just drive. You know, there's no qualification process at the time. Let's just go hit it up. We're like, all right, cool. And we went out there, and I ended up winning, and it was an amazing moment. But, you know, right before I had won, I had graduated from college. So I graduated from college, I believe, like in June, July, or June. I think the games were in July or August, right. And July. And so I ended up choosing to pursue fitness as a light, you know, as my career path, yeah. And open up a gym. And so it all kind of happened like simultaneous. I graduated from college in June, won the CrossFit Games in July, opened my affiliate in August, and ever since it's been a crazy ride.
Mate, you say so casually, we drove down there, was no qualification, and I won the CrossFit Games. But it's sort of a bit of a bigger deal than that, really, isn't it? Like,
at the time, it wasn't that big of a deal. Like, at the time, because in life, you know, you only get out of it what you put into it. So, like, at the time, you know, it was just me and my buddies throwing down. I would do YouTube battles with other people, like OPT, who had won the 2007 Games, and some other guys. And, you know, because you'd only put like a year of work into it and whatever, when you win, like I remember my wife and two friends of mine, we just went to like In-N-Out Burger and just like hung out, and I won like $1,500. It wasn't a big deal, you know,
right.
Because the reason why it wasn't as big of a deal, and granted it was great, is because I hadn't put in as much work to get there. Now, the following year, I ended up taking fifth, which was a good accomplishment. I had a little mishap in the beginning, but the years that really defined a lot of hard work and effort were in 13 and 14 for me. So you figure in 08 I won. In 2014 I took third. In 2013 I took second. And that gap was really cool because I'm proud to say that over so many years I stayed so consistent. Yeah. And but the 13 and 14 were my most proud accomplishments, because specifically probably 14, because the gap was so far, you know, still able to stay at the top. And I had put in so much work that when I hit that podium again, it just meant the world to me. Like, I would take a third place in 14 over the first place in 08 any day.
Really?
Because the amount of work I had put in to get there.
So what – okay, you're at In-N-Out Burger. You've just won the 2008 CrossFit Games. What's really going through your mind? Like you said at the start, it took a bit of time to get into CrossFit, but then you drove down there. So what's going through your mind? What are you thinking the future of this thing called CrossFit is?
You know, at the time, it was just like a fun – you know, a lot of people don't know the way CrossFit was back then. You know, it was very, very, very organic, very very community-oriented, specifically in Northern California, right? Because it was created – you know, Greg Glassman created it here in Santa Cruz. And so – it was very just like, very friendly, very good vibes, and very anti-establishment, very anti-conventional gym back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, knowing what I do now, I didn't know what was to come, right? I just knew that I was enjoying what was going on. I knew that I wanted to pursue my passion for a living, and so I opened up a gym. And at the time, I don't know if anybody really knew the potential. We were just doing it because it was fun, and it kept us in good shape, and it was something we could do for a business and help other people.
Wow. Yeah. So when did you actually open up your gym?
August of 2008.
August. So pretty much directly after the games.
Graduating, winning the games, opening your own gym. My God.
That's right. So I had no money, no nothing, you know. So I won $1,500. I had just bought my wife or my girlfriend an engagement ring like shortly earlier. And so, I had $5,000, opened up a gym in the middle of a junky warehouse, 1,000 square feet, and signed a 6-month lease. And I told myself, I'm like, look, I'm going to come in there. I'm going to bust my ass. And in 6 months, I'm going to have so many members. I'm going to be out of this place. And so I only signed a 6-month lease because I didn't want to be on the hook for longer because I knew we were going to outgrow the space. And that's exactly what happened.
How did you achieve that then, mate? How did you go in there and make it grow so fast in probably a time where if you walk down the street and ask someone, do you know what CrossFit is? People would look at you like you were talking an alien language.
Yeah, I mean, some people would think it had something to do with, winning the games. Obviously I didn't hurt, right? But at the end of the day, what it really came down to is just being the mayor and being there all day, every day. Yeah. You know, people, they open up these businesses and they think like, people are going to walk in our doors. Like, no, they're not. Like, I was there from 5 a.m. till 9 o'clock at night every day for those 6 months, like without a question. And Sundays were an exception, but I remember days where you'd have a woman call on the phone and be like, hey, I want to bring in 2 friends, but we can only make it at 9 PM. I'd be like, hell yeah, come on in. And I used to work out 5 times a day because what was happening is, I got really, really fit by doing this, but basically I didn't have any class schedule because I just said, hey, if someone wants to come to my door, I don't care when you want to come, walk in the door and I'm going to be here. But what ended up happening is you had classes or just 1 or 2 people. And so I would do the workout with them because I didn't want to do it by themselves. And, that went on for a while until we grew into, a class schedule of 6 a.m., 7 a.m., whatever. And just a straight up grind. But at the time it was cool because my wife and I, or my girlfriend at the time, or my fiance, excuse me, we lived at a loft, right down the street. We have no obligations. She was working. And so it was just a good time in my life just to put on the grind, right? And she would come, and it was just a very, community thing. I had my friends come and help me build the rig because at the time, Rogue Fitness didn't really exist. And so I had to build it all out of wood, right? Uh-huh. And it was very, organic that way. It's a time in my life I look back on and it was very proud moments.
When you look back at it now, mate, and you look at how CrossFit has sort of developed, what do you think is the biggest thing that's missing? Like, let's stay on the business side, and then we'll get back to you as an athlete, because I know you're involved heavily now on a business side of things. Like, what are the mistakes that people are making now in 2017? CrossFit gyms are still opening up. What's going wrong, or what's gone right, and what's gone wrong?
I mean, the biggest thing is that the barrier to entry is so low, right? You pay an affiliation fee. You could open up. I mean, I'm a perfect example, right? I opened up my gym with nothing. I had 1 rower, 2 barbells, some dumbbells, and a pull-up rig that I built, right? I mean, I had nothing. And yet you were able to open up a business. And what I didn't realize at the time, and I'm glad I didn't because I probably wouldn't have opened it, is all the risk and liability. And so I think the biggest thing is the barrier to entry is so low, yet the learning curve is so high. And so what I would recommend is for anybody, they have to ask themselves these three very simple questions. Number one, do you have a strong why of opening up a gym? Your why can't be you just want to bro out with some buddies and have 5 partners each put in $5,000, right? It has to be deeper than that, right? It has to be, hey, I want to provide for my family. I want to improve people's lives, whatever. Yeah. Because business is going to get challenging. And when it does, you got to revert back to that why. Number two is how do you win, right? What's your competitive advantage? Are you qualified to open up this business? Because there's guys like me who have been doing this for a decade who are hunting you down, right? Not by intention, but we're trying to put out the best product. And we have a 10-year start on you. So how do you compete? Well, the way you compete is you go find a mentor, you educate yourself, become the best coach possible, and you understand what you're good at and what you're not good at, right? But that's the second thing is how do you win, right? Don't open up a business unless you know you're going to win. And then the third thing is, is it good timing for you? I think a lot of these guys, they open it up and they open up with other jobs. They open up with this, with that. Maybe they have a kid on the way. And then you realize that this is going to be a full-time investment. It's not going to be a joke. Yeah. And I think if you can answer those three things, that you're in a good position. But oftentimes, more times than not, with all the affiliates that I talk to, they can't really rack and stack those things. Mainly it's, hey, we had five guys. We were sitting around a bar one time. We each put in 10 G's, open up a gym, but we didn't have a partnership agreement. We didn't identify roles and expectations. We didn't talk about this and that and other thing. Yeah. And it's not a game.
Yeah.
It's a business like any other. I think that's what a lot of people
like any other
forget. Yeah. So how do they grow from there?
And you know, there's real risk and liability that people don't realize. And, you know, not to be a Debbie Downer, but people don't realize that as soon as you, you know, sign your name on a lease, and, you know, take on, you know, patrons, you immediately have liability. Yeah. And, you know, it's not a joke. You know, I like to tell people, you know, if you just want to go work out, go work out. But if you really want to run a business, you need to look at it like that, because if you're not making any money and you own the business, you know, that's a problem, because you don't have any money in the bank to take care of the lawsuits that could potentially come.
Yeah.
So you asked, how does it grow from there?
Yeah.
And it just grew organically. You know, we started with one location, had some really great staff that ended up coming on about, you know, a year into the game, and just really grew organically. You know, people came in from different reasons. I remember one of our coaches that came in, you know, he goes, hey, look, I don't have any money, but I really want to, you know, be a part of your gym. I am recovering from leukemia, and I like to use this as a way to build back my strength. I say, great. Clean the gym once or twice a week. We'll call it a day, right? And wow. He came on with us, and he's still with us today. We had other coaches who came on, and I mean, we've had coaches with us now for 9 years, which I'm really proud of. You know, that's really cool. And it just grew organically, you know, one at a time. We opened up in Mountain View with a really great coach. Then we opened up here with a really great coach. And just one by one by one. And then what I recognized is that the industry needed to pivot a little bit and go into corporate wellness. So we pursue that. And now we're proud to have, you know, 20 some odd locations in about 8 different countries and 150 on staff doing what they love for a living. And that's been my goal the whole time is, you know, do what I love for a living, but try and provide that to as many people as we can. Wow. And I think we're barely scratching the surface. And I think we have a lot more to do here in 2017.
You say you've got a lot more to do and you're scratching the surface there. What does it look like? What does this thing called CrossFit look like in 5 years' time? Because it is early, but what's it going to come to?
Yeah, I mean, I think time will tell. I think a lot has to do with the direction that HQ tries to pursue. But at the end of the day, I think what CrossFit and Greg Glassman's methodology, right? Let's not even call it CrossFit. Let's just call it Greg Glassman's methodology, has transformed the way people look at fitness, right? They used to think about it as buys and tries, chest and back, whatever. Now looking at it more like function. And I think what he's done with adding a clock has just changed the game, no doubt, and
yeah.
A coach.
Yeah.
I think that he's redefining the way people look at fitness. But I think long term it won't really be called CrossFit anymore. It's just going to be the way people work out. It's just going to be cross training. And right. I think you have a lot of gyms that become very successful doing cross training, right? Just doing community-based fitness with service oriented with a coach. And I think that's what it's eventually going to turn into. Yeah. I that's what I think it will turn into. Yeah. It's going to become, I mean, you look at like take for example, I don't know, Bikram yoga, yeah, right? Yeah. How that was identified as one specific type. Now it's just hot yoga, right?
Yeah.
Same exact idea. Or, you know, Pilates, I could be wrong about this, but look at Pilates. I believe at first it was identified as a specific type. Now it's just kind of like a general form of Pilates. It's not like this one person's thing. And I think what will end up happening is CrossFit will just become like a generic term for just cross training.
Do you think that they're still going to do affiliations and stuff at that point?
Well, I mean, I think the affiliation is a really great question. I think you have to ask yourself one very simple question. By attaching yourself to the CrossFit name, does it add value or hurt value or neutral for your business? And if it adds value, do it. If it's neutral, I don't know. That's a good question for you. And if it's negatively impacting your brand or your business, then obviously you have an obligation not to do it.
Yeah.
And I think over time, people get to make that decision on their own, right?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you know, we all need to be adults, but we're all running a business.
Yeah.
And if we're running a business, we have an obligation to identify what benefits our business and what hurts our business. And when you associate yourself with another company, by default, right, you're attached to them, right, wrong, or indifferent. And so that's just something people need to make that decision on.
Let's jump back to your athletic career, mate, because that's equally as impressive as what you've done business-wise, and people should definitely check out what you've done and follow the business side, because like you've just shared some really key learnings, and I think there's a lot more. How did things develop for you on a training side? It's very cool to hear how you just jumped in with clients and was just working out a lot, but how did it really develop? Because when you were sort of, when you'd won the games and when you were starting out in CrossFit, there wasn't really any information about how to train for CrossFit and what you should be doing. So how did, what was your spin on it? Because it's obviously a recipe that worked quite well.
Well, I mean, I was really blessed to be around people who were at the top of the game. Right. I mean, you gotta think about it. Like, you know, I like to think about, you know, I do believe in right time, right place, but you got to work your ass off, right?
Right.
Here I am in California, Northern California. I'm surrounded by people who are at the top of the spear, tip of the spear at CrossFit, right?
Yeah.
Now that is quote unquote luck, but now right time, right place. Now you got to bust your ass to get there, right?
Yeah.
And so I do believe there was a little something going on in the universe that placed me in this thing. Austin Begeeving was my original coach, and he had the most wealth of knowledge at CrossFit at the time, in my opinion. And so he taught me how to kipping pull up. He taught me all these things. And so him and I would just push each other, push each other, push each other. And I think that was one of the blessings that I had early on, is I had training partners that were actually able to push me. And then I got to a point where I started beating them. And then from there, I started finding other people. And then we started doing. And so at the time, we were just training to train. And, you know, in 08, we were just training, you know, once or twice, you know, once a day. 09, we started like kind of thinking about it more like, hey, what are they going to do at the games? And then after that, then it started becoming a little bit more like, hey, 2-3 sessions a day, identifying what we think they're going to have at the 2010 CrossFit Games and working towards those goals. But, you know, my training partners played a big role, specifically Austin. He was a key component in that.
And how did it grow from there then? You started following this program. You started training super hard. You've been to the games 8 times. Like, how do you get there? Is it different back then than it is today? Like, how does it look?
It's different. It's different, but it's the same. Like, you know, the obligations back in the day are different than the obligations today. And the amount of people that are doing it is more, and the skill level is higher. Take, for example, this. In 2009 CrossFit Games, I took, I think, 2nd in the snatch event. And I believe, yeah, I snatched, if I'm not mistaken, 230, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe 235, maybe.
Yeah.
And I had PR'd my snatch at 230, right? PR'd at 230, and that got me 2nd overall. Now 230 wouldn't even
make it to regionals.
It's not even on the radar. Can't even make it to regionals. And so what happens is, right, the athletes are getting better, people are getting better, and the game is changing. So therefore, you know, the Jason Kalipa back in 08 and 09 had to keep elevating his game. And, you know, I remember the first time I did King Kong, which was like a, you know, heavy deadlift, heavy this, heavy that, you know, I couldn't even perform it. You know, there we go. A year later, I could do it like with the ease. And so it just, you know, everybody kept one-upping each other. Everybody kept one-upping each other. And it was really cool to see the sport. And so I think the obligation for time is really high now, right? If you really want to compete at the highest level, it needs to be your full-time gig. If it's not your full-time gig, it's tough to be there because you need to train 4, 5, 6 hours a day and really, really focus on recovery. I just don't have that type of time commitment anymore. And so, you know, even in 14, I mean, I was trying to get in as much as I can, but I was embracing what I like to call the AMRAP mentality, which really helped me. You know, in 13 and 14, I would show up to the gym and I call it the gotta go program, right? People would be like, what the hell are you doing? It's like, dude, I turn on the clock and I gotta go, right? I don't have time to dilly-dally and, you know, whatever, because I had the business to run, I had family. And so as soon as I got in the gym, I got real focused. And I think that's something that, you know, over time, I think people are going to see the conventional gym. People used to show up and be there for hours and not get much accomplished, right?
Yeah.
Then when you get into a CrossFit gym, you'd show up for a short period of time and get a lot accomplished, right? But now people are still at a CrossFit gym and are starting to, like, not get that much accomplished and be there for 4 or 5 hours. And so I don't have that type of time. And so I used to think about everything I did as an AMRAP, right? I would show up to the gym, turn on a clock, and boom, I'd start my activity, right? And I would have things go on in my head, and I still do this today. What does my body need? How do I get in the best shape I can and just get right to it? And I think that was critical piece to what I would do, because I would do that twice a day. I'd wake up in the morning, boom, hit like an hour hard. Midday, hit an hour hard. But I'd get so much done in those 2 hours that it would be equivalent to someone being in the gym for 4 or 5 hours.
What do you see the state of today? You just touched on two really interesting things, especially for us, and I think for you as well, mate, that, you know, people today are trying to be full-time athletes but have full-time jobs. And, like, how are they making it work? What's the situation with that? Like, because it's tough, right?
People need to make a tough decision and understand the sacrifice they're going to make, right? If you want to, like, for example, we have coaches at my gym who want to go to the CrossFit Games. Yeah. Okay, cool. More power to you, right? I completely respect that. But just understand, by training for the games, you are going to give up something else, right? Yeah. And that's fine. But if you're trying to go to the CrossFit Games, you're training 5 hours a day, that's 5 hours a day that you're not working on your career path or, you know, whatever. And so therefore, you need to make a sacrifice, right? If you're 21 years old, 22 years old, you're just graduating from college, and you know you want to spend the next year or two trying to go to the CrossFit Games and then get into some type of career, cool. But don't get it twisted that you're going to try and you know, make a lot of money or get famous doing CrossFit. It's just not going to happen. It's probably not going to happen quickly. Yeah. You know what I mean? These guys who think that being famous on Instagram is going to make you money, I mean, it's just not the case. You know, being famous on Instagram is like being rich in Monopoly, right? Just because you have a lot of followers doesn't mean you're actually going to drive any revenue.
Yeah.
And so I think it's, you know, there's a very small select group of people who actually make money competing professionally in CrossFit. So people need to recognize that early on, that, hey, what's my internal why? My internal why surely should not be, I want to get rich, I want to get famous. I hope it isn't, because if it is, it's not going to come quick and it's not going to come easy.
Yeah.
But if your internal why is, hey, I want to get into the gym, I want to push myself, and as a byproduct, I want to get into the competition and test where I'm at, now that's a different story, right? But you got to be real about it. You got to be real that by me going for one thing, I'm going to have to make sacrifices elsewhere. Like me, I have to be real that I can't compete at the CrossFit Games level right now because I have a growing business and a growing family. I don't have the time commitment to do so.
Yeah. Do you think the way that CrossFit Open is structured and the way that it's so all-inclusive that anyone can enter the competition and maybe have an outside chance of getting to regionals lures people into that false sense that actually maybe I am good at this? Or why do you think it happens so often that we get this situation?
I mean, I think the Open is a phenomenal tool, right? I think it's great. I just think that, you know, it hasn't gotten to the point yet. Like, for example, you know, if you're a football player and, you know, a football player, any professional sport, right, they're realistic that, hey, going to the NFL is probably unlikely, right?
Yeah.
Realistically, it's probably unlikely, right? But for CrossFit, people haven't wrapped their head around that yet. They still think that just because they could do you know, fast Fran, they're going to go to the CrossFit Games. There's so many other things that play a role, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, but people should be inspired to try and get there. They should be, right? I don't want to cut their legs out from underneath them, but they need to be realistic that if they're having a challenging time qualifying for regionals, they're probably not going to go to the games, right?
Yeah.
The difference between the guys who finish at the top at regionals and the finish at the bottom is night and day.
Yeah.
And they've dedicated their life to the sport. And they've developed a mindset, right? It's a lot of mindset. There's a lot of people that are really good in their garage. When they actually go out and compete, it's totally different. Mm. So you need to practice certain mental skills to be able to get there. And I hate to be the guy who's like the Debbie Downer. I really do, because I want to encourage people to try and get to where they want to go.
Yeah.
But they need to be realistic that, hey, I'm going to take this year to really focus on this.
Yeah.
But as a byproduct, I know that something else is going to go by the wayside.
Yeah.
As long as they're realistic about that, then shit, you know, go for it, brother.
Yeah, exactly. Mate, going back to your performances, obviously in 2013 where you placed second and 2014 where you placed third, what was the difference in your training? Because it's quite a long span. Like, you first entered the games and won it in 2008, and then 2014 you're third. What's the difference? And talk us through some of the cycles maybe you went through or emotions that you went through during that period.
Well, a lot of it was psychological, right? So I started working with a sports mentality coach. Really helped. I understand what's in my control, out of my control, learning how to be easy, learning how to positive self-talk. That was a critical piece. Worked with Chris Hinshaw on endurance. That was a critical piece, right?
Yeah.
My endurance. So I took 1st, 5th, 16th, 7th, 5th, 4th, 2nd, and 3rd. I mean, there was a lot of I think I had 6 top 10 finishes, right? Except that 16th was kind of out here. I don't know what happened over there.
Yeah.
But you know, what I would do is I would look back at my results and be like, I'd look at my results and be like, you know, good, 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 40th, right? top 10, top 10, top 10, top 10, 40th, top 10, top 10. They'd be like, wow, you know, there's an area of improvement. Unlike other people that I was competing against, they were kind of like level keel. For me, I was really good at a lot of things and then poor at endurance. So I found an endurance coach. I started working on the mindset, and those were things that really helped me. And just being aware of what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. And I think people need to be aware of that. Like, you know, a lot of times people think it's strength, right? They look at it and it's like, oh, you could clean 300. I can clean 250. It must be strength. What they don't realize is there's a lot of different – there's several characteristics. Like if you can't do a muscle-up, it's probably gymnastics. You got to work on that. But they always think it's weightlifting because it's so easy to quantify.
Yeah.
Where sometimes they don't look at, hey, is it my engine? How do I build this? And they need to be realistic and take a step back and be like, all right, what am I good at? What am I not good at? And then evaluate and go and crush it. That's what I did.
When you
still do.
You still do. Talk to us a little bit about mindset. Did you identify that you had weaknesses in your mindset, or why did you go and hunt out a mindset coach?
Well, like in 2009, you know, I passed out on this run. First event, boom, just passed out. 2010, I really messed up on the first event called Amanda. And what I realized was I would get in my own head, I would get too anxious, too much anxiety. You know, and that anxiety, what it does, and for anybody listening, you have to be really careful about this. If you're getting too worked up before an event, you're taking your energy and you're dispersing it into the universe instead of taking your energy and dispersing it into the workout. Right. And so prior to the event, you need to be calm, cool, collected. You need to be throughout the duration of the day, you need to harness that energy, harness. Instead of, you know, what I used to do is like listen to rap music, get all pumped up. I remember I had this rap mix for the 2009 Cross Games, like DMX, all this kind of stuff. And I remember the event started, I'm rocking it out, like boom, boom. You're all going to, you know, just pounding it, right? And then, you know, you get half an hour into this run, you're like, oh shit. And, you know, it's because your brain is in overload, your body's in overload, and you need to be able to consolidate that and then execute on that. And that's what the sports psychologist did for me. You know, I'll never forget in 2010, the event was like at 8 p.m. because they wanted it underneath the lights. And I drank a Red Bull earlier in the day because I wanted to stay jacked. You know, what the hell was I thinking? And so, you know, I'm out there. The national anthem plays, right? The jets fly over. And I'm just jacked out of my mind, like just ready to rock, you know? But I was so jacked that that jackness took my energy and dispersed it in the universe instead of putting it into the workout where I needed to be calm. And I ended up just flopping all over it, you know? An event I should have easily won. Or I don't want that, that's not fair to say. An event I should have done well at, yeah. I didn't do well at.
What, talk to us, that's the flip side, and you've told us about some of your epic failures, but talk to us on the other side of the coin where you were able to control that maybe anxiety and those emotions and just absolutely destroy a workout. There must be a few good examples of that because you've had a lot of very high place finishes.
Yeah, I mean, I've won a lot of events. Yeah. And, you know, Burden Run's probably a good example of that, right? You know, you flipped this pig, you ran a couple of miles, flipped this big, big thing, and then finished the sled pull. And that was a good example of just, hey, stay calm on the run. You know, stay calm on the run. And it was also an example of having good endurance, right? Because so a part of for your listeners to understand, one of the things I like to talk about is, you know, confidence that's earned versus confidence that is perceived. And that's a really important characteristic to discuss. If you've earned the right to be confident, you can walk into something and feel good. If you just have perceived, like I'll give you an example. I roll jiu-jitsu a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And I could walk up to a black belt. I could be like, oh, I'm going to mess this dude up in my head. I'm going to be like, yeah. But the fact of the matter is I haven't earned the confidence to actually be, you know, confident in that situation because I haven't been doing jiu-jitsu as long as this guy. This guy's been doing it for 15 years. How the hell am I going to compete with him? This guy's been on the mat 5 days a week, every week for 10 years. He's going to beat me. That's just what's going to happen because he's earned that right. Whereas me, I could pump myself up, slap myself in the face as much as I want, but I haven't earned that right. And so when you talk about like the burden run, you know, you talk about the burden run, I could look at this run. And I could say, hey, I'm going to crush this run. Or I could say, hey, look, I've ran 3 days a week, every week, for the last year to prepare me for this run. I need to go out there and execute on my game plan, and I know I'll do well.
Yeah.
And so that's what I've really learned, right, is amazing. Earned confidence versus perceived. And I think sometimes people want to have this perceived confidence where, you know, they go into a business meeting and they want to act like they know what they're talking about. But the fact of the matter is, unless they've put in the legwork, they're not going to be that confident. You got to put in the work to really feel that confidence.
Absolutely. Another one that I remember you doing very well in was the when the half marathon row came up. Talk to us through through that a little bit, because I think that was it. You'd obviously been working a lot off season on your engine, and then you come in and bang. And I think not many people, with the greatest respect, would have put their money on you to do super well in that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm good at rowing because I'm a little bit heavier, a little bit bigger. Yeah. I'd worked so much cardio and engine, and that was probably one of the better events I've had, that and Burden Run, because I was actually able to enjoy the win before I won.
Right.
So oftentimes, when you win, you don't know it, right? Like, it's super tight. You're going to the finish line, and you don't know if you win, right?
Yeah.
Or even if you do know you're going to win, it's only for a matter of seconds before you win. In this case, with about 2,000 meters to go, I had built up such a lead that I knew I was going to win. I just knew it. I just had to keep my pace, because there was no way someone could catch me based on just keeping at my pace, right? So that was a really cool experience, because here I am rowing for those final 2,000 meters, let's just call it 5-6 minutes, knowing I'm going to win and just embracing it. And that was a really cool event. That one and Burden Run were some of my highlights ever in the CrossFit Games.
What was your worst experience at the CrossFit Games?
Oh, man.
The run?
Yeah, I mean, Camp Pendleton run was really bad. That was in 2012, I want to say.
Yeah.
That was just 10 miles of just straight misery, man. That was the worst experience ever. It was so bad. And you know, talk about earned confidence. I didn't have the earned confidence for that. I remember that night when the event was announced, I stayed up all night with my wife, and I was just like shivering out of anxiety. And that's where I learned that I had a weakness in my game plan, because had I earned the right to be more confident, had I put in more work on the triathlon style training, I wouldn't have felt that way.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, I didn't earn that right. So there I am in the middle of the night shaking with my wife because I didn't put in the work beforehand, right? Yeah. Whereas someone else, if they had been swimming every day and running every day, they would have felt good going into that.
Yeah.
And that was a good lesson learned. But, you know, I'm running, and, you know, I think I took a little bit worse in the middle of the pack. I didn't do terrible, but I didn't do well, that's for sure. And, you know, I'm running, and, dude, I mean, it's just in the middle of nowhere. You're on this military base, and I'm just running. And I remember at one point I'm looking around, there's just no one around, right? Because there's a lot of switchbacks. So, like, you know, you couldn't really see in front of you very much. And at that point, the pack had kind of dispersed. And I'm looking down, and I hear some, like, gunships going off, like, way in the corner, like a helicopter just, boom, letting off rounds. It was pretty badass.
Wow.
And I look down, and I see a tarantula. This is a true story. I see a tarantula just cross in front of my feet. And I look down, I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? Like, why am I doing this, right? So I walk for a minute, right? And I look around, I'm like, I don't see anybody. And then I remind myself, like, the reason why I'm doing this is because I made a commitment to complete the CrossFit Games. I made a commitment to come out here and express all my training and put myself out there, right?
Wow.
Get comfortable with uncomfortable. Wow. And it was time for me to man up, not be a wimp, and finish out these events.
Wow.
And, you know, that's one of those moments in life where you got to check yourself, you know? You got to – there's moments in life where you got to, you know, I like to call it when your back's up against the wall and someone comes up and you just kind of – grab you by the waybos and say, hey, are you going to step up and finish this, or are you going to be a whatever and fail or give up, right? And that wasn't really an option at the time. So there's moments like that throughout my CrossFit history that really and in life, right? So that same analogy goes into life, you know, like when my daughter was diagnosed with leukemia and my wife and I are sitting there, it's like, dude, that's a perfect example. You know, your back couldn't be harder up against the wall, right? All this CrossFit stuff is nothing compared to that, right?
Yeah, right.
And your back's up against the wall, and you ask yourself, you know, are you going to man up and step up for your family, or are you going to back down and allow this thing to take you into a place of sorrow?
Yeah.
And you know, that was a challenging time, but you figure, you know, the way you attack leukemia. Again, these are very widespread analogies, but the way you attack these workouts and the way you never give up, the way you push through, the way you have an internal why, and then how that translates into real life, I think is really cool to see.
Absolutely. Mate, 2013, it was, you know, all over the place that you're in the best shape of your life. This was going to be the games. You were going to, you know, give Rich Froning the biggest push. You end up second. I mean, was that your best games, and what was it like, you know, if it was, what was it like to give absolutely everything and play second to this guy and all that he did?
Yeah, I mean, I had started off with a huge lead, right? And I was doing really great. And, you know, looking back on it, I had one event, the zigzag sprint. Yeah. Had I not placed 40th, you know, I probably would have won the games. But the fact of the matter is, I did place 40th. That was an area that, you know, my agility is just not that great. Yeah. And Rich is a phenomenal competitor, and he comes back. And, you know, I don't really have many regrets, if any, right? For sure. You go out there, you leave it all on the table. And what happens, happens. And, you know, my hat's off to him for being able to, you know, go out there and perform on a consistent basis. And, yeah, I thought, you know, I mean, him and I were really battling for first and second the entire weekend. Yeah. And I thought that first was definitely in contention. But, you know, hey, looking back, you know, that's one of the things about competing and everything is that you only have one shot to do it. So you need to go out there and do your absolute best so you can sit here on a podcast and have no regrets from several years ago.
That's very cool. Talk to us a little bit about some of the athletes. Who did you sort of fear going into a workout against, or what was the respect like for different athletes on different workouts? From being at so many games, and I think in your era there was a lot of guys that you sort of see year after year. What was that whole environment and atmosphere like?
I mean, the vibes were pretty good, cause, like, especially with me and Rich. I mean, we've competed so many times together and against each other, right? So we competed on Team USA 3 times together. Ben Smith, same thing, right? Yeah. So a lot of these guys, they're like, you know, I consider them friends. And so we would just hang out in the back, and it was very mutual respect, right? Yeah, I wanted to kick his ass, but, you know, but it was a very mutual respect type of atmosphere, right? We never, ever, you know, at least up until 14, there was no real shit talking that occurred, right? Yeah. Just keyword is very level keel because similar to jiu-jitsu, there's always a way to be humbled, right? You might think you're the best, but there's going to be an event that you're not going to be able to perform well on, and that's where you get humbled. And, you know, I don't know where it's going to go in the future. I don't know where it's even at today. I just hope that the young bucks that come into the game stay humble and stay hungry because we don't need a bunch of jerks in our sport, and that's the environment that we, I think, fostered in the beginning, and hopefully it'll stay that way. Because no one in the beginning, you know, like, you got to figure, I got into this thing and I won $1,500. Yeah. It wasn't for money or fame, right? 2009 was for $5,000 was a winning. So when people got into it old school, there was a level of just mutual respect and humbleness.
Yeah.
Because no one got into it for the money. Now it might be a little bit different.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Let's talk to the modern era now as it is 2017. Any names that you think you should be looking out for or we should be looking out for? Who do you think will maybe win the games this year? Do you want to put it out there?
I mean, you know, I always got to root for my buddy Ben Smith. I think he's extremely consistent, and he's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
Obviously, Matt Frazier's looking super solid. I think Noah Olsen's got a lot going on for him. You know, it's the similar guys, right? It's the Scott Pantrick's of the world. It's the guys that have been really consistent. When you look at, you know, performances, there's certain people that don't get as much press, right? Yeah. But when you look at them, their body of work is super impressive. Like, Ben Smith's body of work is very impressive. You know, I finished on the podium 3 times. Ben Smith's been on the podium 4 times, right? Yeah. I mean, he's as legit as they come. And Matt Frazier's looking really good, too. And, you know, I think what people should be impressed with is consistency, right? Not necessarily one event or one games. And there's a number of people who have been very consistent over very many years. I'm looking forward to how they do. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think people can get wrapped up with the sport of CrossFit, and what they need to realize is that the sport of CrossFit is just one facet of what it is. The sport of CrossFit is not what CrossFit is. CrossFit is the everyday mom and pop getting the best shape of their life. And I think, you know, now more than ever, I've realized that, you know, that the games can be polarizing to a whole different community that's just trying to get in and get a great workout. And so for those people who are listening, we just can't get too wrapped up in the idea that, you know, yes, it's inspiring to watch the, you know, Sarah Sigmund daughter and these different people do amazing things. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but we can't forget what the foundation of this sport is, which it starts with the 99%, and then the 1%, you know, elevates and does their thing. Yeah. And it's awesome to watch, but most people can't even relate, right? So those people should just be focused on, you know, the coaches that are listening should be focused on getting the 99% better shape. You know, a gym that's focused on competitive CrossFitters is going to be very challenging to be successful. Yeah. Let's just put it that way. If you're focused on the 99%, the 99% pay your bills, right?
Yeah.
The 1% generally want a free membership, and they generally have a sense of entitlement. So you got to be really careful with that.
That's very true. Mate, talking about what's going on now. What's going on in your training now? You've obviously, you're a super competitive guy. You're successful in CrossFit. You're successful in business. How do you fuel your physical side now? What training are you doing? Are you looking at competitions? Where's it at?
Yeah, I mean, I just did Wadapalooza. That was fun. I'm doing the Open. I did 17.1. That was cool. For me, it's just realizing that, you know, what I really want to win at right now is the sport of business, right?
Right.
The sport of business is what I'm focused on right now.
Yep.
But it doesn't mean that I can't compete physically as well. So, you know, I competed in my first jiu-jitsu competition. That was awesome. I'll do another one, right? I just always want to be uncomfortable, right? So that could be, you know, competing in something new, right? That could be the sport of business, getting uncomfortable there. But I never want to get comfortable with comfortable, right?
Right.
And I think my days of going to the CrossFit Games are out because I don't have the time commitment to do so. But it doesn't mean that I can't get uncomfortable, go learn a new sport, go do something fun, go do this, do that. I can still be in phenomenal shape and go test myself, and that's what I'm focused on right now.
Explain to our listeners why it's important to get uncomfortable.
I mean, well, I think getting uncomfortable in life is the critical piece. I mean, you know, I think if you're comfortable, like, you know, people can just get their job and be comfortable. They show up to work every day. They do their thing. They could go to the gym, you know, do some buys and tries, be comfortable and leave. But by getting uncomfortable, that's where results are at, right? It's through CrossFit. The reason why CrossFit works so well is because you have a coach, a group, atmosphere, and the intensity or the effort that gets you the results you're looking for. That same thing doesn't happen in the conventional gym because people don't push themselves to those levels, right? And that same thing relates to business. So for me, every day in business, it's like, hey, how do I go out there and try and get a new account? How do I get in front of new people? How do I get comfortable with uncomfortable? Go put myself in situations where I am sweating a little bit because I'm nervous, right? Because that's when you feel the most alive, right? And that goes for when you're right before you're about to get into a workout, during a workout. And that goes, you know, for me, it definitely goes into business too. I like going into business situations where I feel that sense of like a little bit of butterflies in your stomach because I know that when I accomplish the task, which I will, it's that much more rewarding. But if everything was just easy, it wouldn't feel as good when you finish it.
Exactly.
Mate, you seem to have a lot of motivation, a lot of drive, a lot of passion. Where did that come from? You had it when you left university. You still have it now in a different area. Did you have like mentors or people that you really looked up to? Where has all this come from?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have people I look up to. You know, when I started working at the conventional gym in high school, the front desk, the owner of the gym, he was a good mentor of mine, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to be like him, and his name's Joe Gigantino, and he worked hard. He was successful. He had children, and he maintained his fitness, and it was great. And I don't know, man, just over the years, I wanted to be independently wealthy. I wanted to be able to go out and take my wife out to dinner. I wanted to be able to provide for my children. I wanted to be able to, you know, it's just, I don't know, man, it's just an internal drive, right?
Yeah,
I don't know if you could really teach it. I think you either have it or you don't, where, you know, for me, it's not even a question. It's like, I'm going to wake up in the morning and ask myself, what can I do today to better everything that's going on?
Yeah.
And I'm going to hustle when it comes to business. I'm going to hustle in my fitness. I'm going to hustle with my family to try and be the best dad I can. And that's just something, the way I live my life, and I call it the AMRAP mentality, right? I'm going to AMRAP something, move on to the next thing, and just boom.
You're doing an incredible job,
you know,
mate.
I mean, it's funny, man, because like in college, you know, I started a clothing company, learned a lot about that. I invested in some different companies. I lost a lot of money doing it throughout college. I've just learned through practical application, but just, you know, hey, you win some, you lose some, but you keep grinding at it.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of people don't even want to try because they don't want to fail.
Yeah.
But it's okay to fail, right? Just fail forward. <You know?
laughs> Man, if you could give one piece of advice that you've learned through your whole career and everything, what would that be?
I would just try and say, you know, identify what's important to you, right? Find your focus, pick a few of them, work really hard at whatever those focuses are, and at night ask yourself a very simple question. Did I do the best I can at those focuses that I chose today, right?
Nice.
At night, on a micro level, how did I do as a father? How did I do with my fitness? How did I do as an employee or whatever I'm doing, or how did I do on the podcast, whatever.
Yeah.
And at night, if you see areas of improvement, that's okay. Just do it the next day. So this way you don't wake up 3 years later and say, damn, I didn't even spend one single day with my kid, right? Mm-hmm. Or I didn't, you know, here I am at my job and I'm doing the exact same thing today as I was 3 years ago, making the same amount of money. And I wish I had, you know, at night put in more emphasis the next day to increase my scope of work so that the employer could see more value in me or whatever. And so that's what I would say to people is identify what's really important to you. And those are different things. You have to identify, you know, what's important to you is different than important to me, because if you don't have any kids or whatever it is, it's different. Yeah. And then work really hard at those things. And I think, going back to getting comfortable with uncomfortable, I think it's better to get uncomfortable on a daily basis than it is to look back 5-10 years from now and be like, damn, I'm still doing the exact same thing and I haven't accomplished my goals that I wanted to accomplish.
Amazing. Mate, some incredible content there. We won't take any more of your time. You're an inspiration to pretty much everyone in the CrossFit world. And I think what you've told us today really will inspire a lot of our listeners. So we just want to, from InnerFight, we want to wish you the very best of luck in everything you do. Hopefully we'll stay connected and get an update of your energy and your passion in a year's time, because we're sure that you'll probably have some more good stories for us. That's for sure.
Yeah, probably will. Yeah. That's
true. We'll see. Awesome.
Thank you so much for taking your time, mate.
Thanks a lot for coming on the show. And mate, we'll keep following you, and obviously people can follow you over on your social media. And we'll direct everyone over to come and see you when they're over in NorCal and come for a workout.
Sounds good, guys. Well, I hope you guys have a good rest of your day, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot, Jason. Take care. Thanks a lot for tuning in to this episode of the podcast, folks. Do hope you enjoyed it, and a massive thanks to Jason for his time and awesome insights. Thanks again for your continuous support of the Inner Fight podcast. This is number 300. We're not going to stop. We're going to keep pumping out shows. And thanks to you guys for being our listeners.